You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Greeley Tribune, read by John Middleton. This recording is being made on Monday, January 5th, 2026. Today we will be reading the following main articles. How CU Boulder's student news site got taken over by AI slop. The imposter website is confusing readers with articles that appear to be generated by artificial intelligence and is siphoning page views from real student reporting, the CUI's journalists say. How one Colorado teacher is using AI in the classroom. Summit flight training helps flyers take to the sky. Greeley Gems. Opinion. Resolutions are easy to make, but harder to keep. How can I prevent Windows from auto-updating while I'm working? Denver making bid to host 2028 Denver Democratic National Convention. La Petite closure leaves unpaid rent frustration. Followed by miscellaneous articles and obituaries. How CU's Boulder student news site got taken over by AI slop. Copycat websites increasingly common amid rise of artificial intelligence, CU independence attorneys say. By Elizabeth Hernandez of the Denver Post. Google the CU Independent, the student news outlet that covers the University of Colorado Boulder, and the first result, CUIndependent.com, is a copycat website churning out what appears to be AI slop with headlines like, "Why does my itchy scalp itch a day after washing?" The second result, CUIndependent.org, is a legitimate news site run by dozens of CU Boulder student journalists who take photographs and write articles about local sports, student government, arts and culture, and campus goings-on. Their website warns that the news organization is not affiliated with CUIndependent.com, the web address the CU Independent had used since 2009. The imposter site is confusing readers with articles that appear to be generated by artificial intelligence and is siphoning page views from real student reporting, the CUI's journalists say. They spent hundreds of dollars of their own money trying to fix the problem, enlisted lawyers, and even tried to get the Colorado Bureau of Investigation involved. Students built an entirely new website, the new version, the version now found at CUIndependent.org, over the summer in hopes of disentangling themselves from the old one. In my time as editor-in-chief, I would love to spend more time working on our reporting than trying to fix this website that's impersonating us, said Greta Kirchhoff, who is serving as the CUI's editor-in-chief this academic year. The CUI has no official connection to the university's journalism program, but Department Chair Patrick Ferrucci said the faculty wishes the student publication's editorial staff success as it works to resolve this unfortunate situation. Online AI-generated content can be inauthentic and misleading and should not be confused with high-quality community journalism, professional ethics and editorial standards, and the skills of dedicated student journalists honing their craft at CU Boulder and at other colleges and universities, Ferrucci said in a statement. When a reporter from the Denver Post messaged the imposter site asking who was behind it, the emailed response ignored the question entirely, instead offering prices from $149 to $299 that could be paid for articles with quick link integration into content that's already resonating with our audience. It feels incredibly malicious. Nobody knows who is running the knockoff site, which claims to be an evolution of CU Boulder's student-run campus news outlet with roots dating back to 1978. The site purports to still be the CUI, but a little bit different. Our team believes in the freedom to speak, feel, and explore who we are, the imposter website says on its About page. We still honor what CU Independence stood for: strong voices, independent thought, and stories that matter. You'll see new faces and new sections, but the heart stays the same. The website lists seemingly fictitious writers and advisors alongside what appear to be AI-generated photos and author biographies. Some of those bios claim the site's journalists, who are supposed to be college students gaining experience, are seasoned reporters with more than a dozen years of experience in the journalism industry. A Google search of the reporters' names did not turn up results elsewhere. In at least one case, the image of a real journalist is used. The Imposter CUI website features a bio of a writer named Avery Quinn that includes a photo of real-life Czech journalist Pavla Holkova, an image taken from the documentary The Killing of a Journalist. As the site located at their longtime web address keeps posting new AI-generated articles that have nothing to do with CU, the student journalists say they are at their wits' end. Above all, they worry about their journalistic reputation being tarnished. It is clearly being done by someone who knows every legal loophole, said Jessica Sachs, the CUI's editor-in-chief during the 2024-25 academic year and a current CU Boulder journalism student. It feels incredibly malicious. How did a rogue website become the bane of these students' existence? The answer isn't entirely clear, but years of unorganized cybersecurity management likely contributed to the situation, Sachs said. Kind of a security nightmare. Since the CUI's website inception, the publication, then still named the Campus Press, became online only in 2006. A revolving door of college students had access to the various passwords and permissions for the publication's WordPress content management system without much organization or documentation. It was kind of a security nightmare, Sachs said. I made it my mission to fix everything as much as I could. Last year, during Sachs' tenure as editor-in-chief, she said the CUIndependent.com domain registration was about to expire, but nobody knew who the original account holder was or had the password needed to renew the account. Sachs said she went back 5 or 6 generations of editors-in-chief, but could not find the keeper of the domain. For years, she said, the entire website went down, sometimes for just 24 to 48 hours, whenever the registration lapsed, only to come back online after the unknown account holder paid the bill. That was way too stressful, Sachs said. To avoid that drama, Sachs enlisted the help of a computer science freshman who spent last summer building a replica of the CU website along with its archives at the CUIndependent.org address. The students thought they had solved their problems. The new website was up and running. The old site vanished for about 9 months. But when Kirchhoff took over as CUI editor-in-chief this academic year, the old .com address came roaring back. Someone had apparently bought up the expired web address. The current site, like many web pages, is registered anonymously through GoDaddy. The old domain featured what appeared to be AI-generated content on the website, posting as the student's news outlet. Articles on the impersonator site range from "How many albums does Drake have?" to "Why does my hair hurt when I move it another direction?" to "Is Freddie Highmore actually autistic?" The fake site initially used the real CUI's trademark logo and linked to the news organization's social media pages, but whoever was behind it eventually made their own logo and created fake CUI Instagram and Facebook pages, rendering Kirchhoff's attempt to report trademark abuse moot. Whoever is doing this seems to have a good understanding of media law because they narrowly scrape by with what they can get away with, Kirchhoff said. Kirchhoff said she spent her own money hiring a domain broker to try to buy back the .com site to no avail. Out of options, she contacted the Student Press Law Center, which connected her with a lawyer. Protecting students' intellectual property. Attorney Alexandra Bass, who is representing the student newsroom, said copycat websites are becoming increasingly common, and the rise of AI further contributes to the chaos. This can be particularly harmful to student newsrooms whose staff often changes from year to year, Bass said in a statement. Student newsrooms should consider designating a person responsible for domain maintenance and implementing a documented process to manage their domains amid transitions. Copycat news sites use AI to mass-produce content quickly, generating revenue from ads and affiliate links, Bass said. It's not easy to prove the imposter site is generating money, which is why Kirchhoff said the Colorado Bureau of Investigation's Business Fraud Unit couldn't take the case. Bass advised the student journalists to document instances of public confusion and file a Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy complaint to have the copycat site taken down and ideally get the domain transferred back to them. The CUI is in the process of filing such a complaint, the student editor said, and they've reported the fraudulent website to nearly every entity they can imagine. The fight, though, has even impacted the CUI's news.org site. The student reporter's news site has experienced intermittent problems with security pop-ups and blocked access for some visitors. When Kirchhoff brought the issue to WordPress, she said employees with the content management system told her the CUI site was secure. She believes the repeated reports made by CUI staff against the imposter website are being misattributed to the .org address, triggering those error messages. Jonathan Gaston Falk, an attorney with the Student Press Law Center, said the CU Boulder student's case and others involving AI are difficult to pursue because it's hard to find an actual human or legal entity against whom to lodge grievances like copyright infringement. That's increasingly difficult when the lines are blurred as to who is actually running or managing some of those websites, Gaston Falk said. We're very proud of these student journalists who are stepping up not only to report it, but to protect their intellectual property. This student leader, Kirchhoff, has been absolutely dogged in trying to protect her and her newsroom's rights here, so we're very happy about that. How one Colorado teacher is using AI in the classroom. Educators are using artificial intelligence to create lesson plans and help with student assignments. By Jessica Seaman of the Denver Post. Colorado Springs. As Adam Gravener's world history class settled into their seats one day in November, he handed out worksheets with questions about social class changes that occurred during the mid to late 1800s. Turn your textbooks to page 571, Gravener told his students at Coronado High School in Colorado Springs. The pupils, with only their textbooks and pencils, began answering questions about how industrialization and colonization changed society from literature to the role of women. Not a single student used a computer as the teens wrote their answers that morning, and yet their worksheet was created with artificial intelligence. The rise of AI in education has spurred fears of students cheating and not developing crucial thinking skills. But K-12 teachers like Gravener are also turning to the technology to help draft lesson plans, track students' progress, and create assignments. AI has reframed how we think about the classroom, Gravener said. The Colorado Springs School District 11, which runs Coronado High, piloted AI with a small group of teachers 2 years ago. Now, about 100 of the roughly 1,800 teachers in the district use AI to create lesson plans, classroom activities, and other academic content. Gravener can use AI to draft lesson plans based on class curriculum and state academic standards, which he said helps make both the teacher and his students more present in the classroom. The teacher now leads discussions that teach pupils about certain subjects as well as interpersonal and other skills instead of just having students complete worksheets on their laptops. This has helped students get off their laptops and into their textbooks, Gravener said. Teens are also using good old pen and paper to complete assignments more than they used to when Gravener started teaching at the start of the pandemic, he said. AI is getting my students off their computers, he said. It is actually way more hands-on. Schools are still in the early stages of embracing AI, but research published by the College Board in October found that high school students are increasingly using generative AI tools such as OpenAI's ChatGPT to brainstorm, edit essays, and conduct research. More than half of the students who responded to the College Board survey said they use AI to complete assignments, but only about 13% of educators said their schools encourage AI use in all classrooms. Proponents argue that students need to learn how to use AI so they are successful in the future when they move on to college and careers. Students also need to learn how to use AI responsibly, similarly how previous generations were taught to use the Internet and Wikipedia when they were first created, Gravener said. AI has been let out of the bag and is part of our world now, Gravener said. In a way, it's teaching them to work with the tools they have without doing the work for them. Others have criticized AI systems for being inaccurate, creating privacy concerns, and being tools students can use to cheat on assignments. Generative AI uses information from the Internet to create text, image, and sound responses based on a user's request. The Denver Post is among a group of newspapers that have sued Microsoft and OpenAI for allegedly using millions of copyrighted articles to train their AI products, such as ChatGPT. One of Gravener's students is among those who are wary of using AI. Coronado Junior Emily Park, an artist, has used AI to find resources for class assignments and to proofread her essays, but she also worries about the technology hurting the art industry. I find an ethical dilemma using it, the 17-year-old said. You can't trust everything it gives you. Coronado High specifically uses PowerBuddy, an AI technology that is built into PowerSchool's software for K-12 institutions. PowerBuddy has guardrails in place to protect student data and make sure the material shared with students is suited for the classroom, said Trip Kuchera, Vice President of Innovation and Research for PowerSchool's. It really is an important learning and teaching aid, he said. More than 150 school districts in Colorado use PowerSchool. As AI is built into the platform, the company doesn't track how many schools use AI specifically in the classroom. Other districts that use the software's AI technology in schools include Broward County Public Schools in Florida and Torrance United School District in California. In Colorado, the Boulder Valley and St. Brain School Districts have also started teaching educators how they can use AI. It's cool to see our leaders and schools really start to tackle this, Jason Kelsall, St. Brain Valley's learning system strategist, told the Daily Camera last year. They can dig in with other educators. We want to create time for teachers to explore how they can use these tools to make what they already do even better. Graviner's students can use PowerBuddy for brainstorming and formatting essays. Pupils can also use the technology to ask research questions, but PowerBuddy won't write the paper for them, and Graviner can see their chat history to make sure work isn't copied, he said. The key to using AI, he said, is to teach students that the technology is not a crutch that can do their schoolwork for them, Graviner said. If we just copy and paste this, students aren't learning, he said. Both students and teachers cannot over-rely on these tools for our thinking. Summit Flight Training helps flyers take to the sky. Greeley Gems. Since opening in October 2021, Summit Flight Training have helped many take to the sky with what they've learned. By Chris Boland of the Greeley Tribune. Greeley Gems is a weekly feature showcasing the city's businesses and nonprofits. If you have a business or nonprofit that you'd like to be featured, email Tribune Entertainment reporter Chris Boland at cbolan@greeleytribune.com. Summit Flight Training opened October 30, 2021 at 722 Airport Road at the Greeley Weld County Airport. Since, many have taken to the sky with what they've learned, from weekend hobby pilots to more than a few now working at major airlines. Co-owner and general manager Jason Edmonds recently spoke with the Greeley Tribune about how Summit Flight Training has grown since its beginning 4 years ago and how, for Summit, customer service is the name of the game. How did Summit Flight Training get its start? Corey Griffin and Andrew Chung, the two original owners, had done some flight training at another school in northern Colorado. And once they had all their ratings, essentially felt they could do things different, better. So they leased this hangar, and the ball started rolling. In September 2022, I started working here as the operations manager. Then, in June 2023, they approached me about becoming the third owner. What does Summit Flight Training do, and what sets the business apart from the rest? We are a full-service flight school, and we tailor all levels of flight experience, from 0 hours all the way up to someone who may just want some refresher courses. If somebody just wants to be a weekend flyer, we can train them to be a weekend pilot. If somebody wants to be a professional pilot and fly for one of the legacy airlines, we can get you to the point of knocking on their door for your interview. I think our business model is what sets us apart from most other places. We pay attention and cater to people. When people call, we answer the phone. When people come to the door, we're here. We want to make flying as accessible to folks as possible. What was a significant moment or event for Summit Flight Training? It's hard to nail down just one. This place has grown from just two people to now maintaining about 80 students. We've been able to purchase two new planes, but I would say the fly-in event we've done for the past 2 years. No matter what your level of aviation is, there's a little something for everybody to do. You get to see cool planes, meet people, and just hang out. We also believe it's brought a lot of awareness to the airport. Because there are people that have lived in Greeley their whole lives and didn't even know the airport exists 2 miles outside of town. What drives your success? Our customer service, hands down. I know from the number of students that come in here saying, we've called 7 other flight schools throughout northern Colorado, and nobody gave us the attention you guys have given us. So it's all about customer service. What are your goals for the future? We'd like to get at least one of these other hangars, which there may be some opportunities within the next year or two, and move in a complete maintenance shop that would be a subsidiary of Summit Flight Training. We've already got a killer maintenance guy. Put him in there and he can do all of our repairs here, there, plus all the other stuff he does around the airport. Summit Flight Training. Summit Flight Training's offering include discovery flights, private pilot training, instrument rating training, commercial pilot training, certified flight instructor training, multiple engine rating, and mountain flying at 722 Airport Road in Greeley. Resolutions are easy to make, but harder to keep. Opinion from Sandy Squiquero. To many Americans, the ball dropping at Times Square in New York City signals the start of the new year in this country. The ball was first dropped in 1908. January was established as the first month of the year by the Roman calendar, and it was named after the god Janus, a Latin word for door. Janus had two faces which allowed him to look both backwards into the old year and forward into the new one at the same time. He was the spirit of the opening. Millions of people make New Year's resolutions. They are easy to make, but harder to keep. Many resolutions have changed throughout the years. It seems the older, or should I say, the wiser we get, resolutions tend to be tied to good health. I really am going to be more physically active this year, aren't I? I promise I will be more organized and less ... If you haven't made your New Year's resolutions yet, there is still time. Many New Year's resolutions have to do with bettering ourselves, becoming kinder, more tolerant, or perhaps learning to curb our tempers. Many people vow to become more generous, less selfish, or perhaps more thoughtful of others. In short, New Year's is the time to reflect on ourselves and our recent past and to try in some way to improve ourselves in the coming year. Wouldn't it be nice if people could seriously evaluate themselves and really change bad habits and improve our areas of shortcoming? Obviously, it's not quite that easy. Ingrained human behaviors are not easy to change. Take, for example, smoking, overeating, gambling, and other forms of addictive behaviors. We may want to change behavior on some level, but actually changing requires effort and commitment. It is in these areas that counselors and other behavior professionals can really help people improve their lives. Oftentimes, individuals are very close to solving serious personal issues and problems, but just can't quite get the job done. This is like a New Year's resolution. It never quite works out for some people, despite the best of intentions. Then one day, that person meets someone who encourages them in their New Year's resolution and helps them achieve it. For this year, when you think about New Year's resolutions or desires to change one's life, if the issue is serious and your happiness is very much at issue and you just can't get there on your own, reach out to someone who will help you accomplish your goals, whether that is a friend, a spouse, a coworker, or a healthcare professional. Remember, change is not easy. Large changes are very difficult. Change is worthwhile. Sometimes we can do well by ourselves, but sometimes we need someone to help us along. So this year, as you make your resolution, include others in your plans, if possible, and realize that improvement is a journey. Give yourself credit for what you have accomplished in 2025 and look towards 2026 with hope. Try to enter 2026 with realistic optimism. Don't set impossible goals, but plan actions that can really help you and make your life better. How can I prevent Windows from auto-updating while I'm working? By Dave Taylor at AskDaveTaylor.com. Question. At least once a week, I turn on my PC and start working just to have it interrupt me with an update that I need to apply. I generally ignore those. I don't want to waste time with a restart, but it's annoying. Is there some way I can tell Windows to just stop with this pointless updates? Answer. There's a lot to consider with this question, but let's start with your assumption that updates are pointless. That's rarely true. Most of those Windows Update notifications are related to security patches, driver updates, feature updates, and similar digital safety improvements. In other words, those pop-ups represent Microsoft trying to ensure that your computer is as safe as possible. This is happening even as malware authors endlessly try new attacks and so-called zero-day exploits to gain control of your device. With the increase in operating system complexity, this endless update process happens with smartphones, tablets, e-book readers, computers, and even smart TV systems. In all cases, I strongly recommend that you approve all critical manufacturer updates. When should the update apply? What you can control, however, is when the system applies the updates. On a Mac system, it's part of the notification. They're typically offered three options: restart now, try tonight, remind me tomorrow. On a Windows system, you actually have even more control through settings by going to Windows Update, Advanced Options, Active Hours. You can then set the times when Windows is prohibited from restarting your PC because of a pending update. Once Active Hours are set, Windows will typically install updates that don't require a reboot and queue up important updates as part of the next shutdown or startup cycle. Optional updates can sit uninstalled forever if you don't give the OS time to run, so either let your computer occasionally run overnight or manually check and apply updates every few weeks. The perfect time to do that is just before a lunch break. In Settings, go to Windows Update and click Check for Updates. If there are any pending, click to download them, then head out to lunch while everything's saved on your computer. When you come back, you'll likely have to click Restart button. Click that, hang up your coat, grab a cup of hot coffee, and it'll be restarted, updates applied, ready for you to get back to work. The problem with locking out the update process and never applying updates, particularly security updates, is that it will make your PC increasingly vulnerable to external attacks and all sorts of unnecessary risks. Remember, those updates aren't designed to annoy us. They're designed to keep our devices safe in an increasingly dangerous digital world. Dave Taylor has been involved with the online world since the beginning of the Internet. He runs the popular AskDaveTaylor.com tech Q&A site and invites you to subscribe to his weekly email newsletter at AskDaveTaylor.com/subscribe. You can also find his entertaining gadget reviews on YouTube at YouTube.com/AskDaveTaylor. Denver making bid to host 2028 Democratic National Convention. Mayor Mike Johnston wants to bring DNC back to Colorado 20 years after Obama's mile-high acceptance. By Elliot Wensler of the Denver Post. The last time Denver hosted the Democratic National Convention, a not-yet-gray Barack Obama stood before 80,000 people in a stadium pulsating with excitement and chants of "Yes, we can," as he accepted his party's nomination for President of the United States. 20 years later, Denver city leaders want to recreate that moment. The thousands of eager visitors, the national focus on the Mile High City, the event that sparked a decade of Democratic political success. Mayor Mike Johnston's office is preparing a bid to host the 2028 Democratic National Convention, according to a letter from Colorado's Democratic members of Congress provided to the Denver Post by one of the signatories' offices. Presidential nominated conventions, which happen every 4 years, are where Democratic and Republican Party delegates formally select their presidential candidates. If Denver is successful, it would mean a major economic boost for a city still struggling to rebuild its downtown after COVID-19 pandemic and years of construction on 16th Street. When Chicago held the event in 2024, it brought in an estimated $200 million in spending, according to the Chicago Tribune. The 2008 convention created a regional benefit of about $400 million in today's dollars for the Denver area, then Mayor John Hickenlooper estimated at the time. The event would also have costs, however. Thousands of new people all pouring into Denver at one time would strain the city's resources, including its infrastructure and law enforcement. The 2008 convention brought protests and a heavy police presence. CBS News Chicago found that the Windy City spent at least $75 million in federal dollars to strengthen its fire and police forces and on construction. Denver's own budget has been strained this past year as stagnating sales tax revenue triggered layoffs and spending cuts. So far, Johnston's office isn't providing details on the city's bid, with spokesman John Ewing saying only, "We are honored to be in consideration to host the Democratic National Convention." But a letter of support from the state's Democratic members of Congress, two-party chair Ken Martin, confirms the city plans to submit a bid. "We would be honored to welcome the Democratic National Convention back to Colorado in 2028 and to share the incredible amenities, hospitality, and spirit of our thriving state," according to the letter dated December 17. "We encourage you to give the bid submitted by the City and County of Denver your full and fair consideration, consistent with all applicable laws and regulations." Denver's DNC pitch. It's unclear exactly what Denver leaders will include in their proposal, but the delegates' letter and input from political experts provide some clues into what officials may highlight. The package is likely to present some practical necessities, like possible hotel, security, and venue options, and an appeal to a grander political narrative about how Denver represents the future of the Democratic Party. Colorado has become a Democratic stronghold in recent election cycles, a major change from its swing state status in 2008. As national Democrats search for a new path to political success, returning to the place that launched the Obama coalition may offer a strong symbol. Colorado's Democratic representatives in Congress nodded to that in their letter, calling Obama's nomination one of the most iconic moments in convention history. Part of what made Obama's acceptance speech so notable was that it took place at Empower Field at Mile High, then called Invesco Field. Typically, nominating conventions are held in smaller, enclosed arenas. Last-minute change to the massive stadium created a unique, rock star-like atmosphere that Democrats haven't replicated since. While Obama's campaign attempted to hold another open-air acceptance in 2012, weather delays forced event-goers inside. The congressional delegation also pointed to the convenience of most parts of the country having direct flights into Denver International Airport and the city's A-line commuter train from the airport to Union Station. Beyond the city, Colorado's natural beauty offers extraordinary opportunities for attendees who may wish to extend their stay, they wrote. Shad Mirab, the chair of the Colorado Democratic Party, also declined to share details on the city's application, but confirmed that the party is working with Johnston's office on it. In a statement, he nodded to recent election results that show Colorado voters are only getting more Democratic despite the opposite happening in many parts of the country. In 2024 and 2025, Colorado showed the nation how Democrats can win in rural and red areas, alike with community-oriented candidates, year-round organizing, and an across-the-board focus on saving people money and strengthening freedoms, he said in a written statement. That's what it's going to take to win back Congress and the White House. what national Democrats may consider. In the past, the Democratic National Committee has oscillated between hosting the event in swing states and safe Democratic areas. The last convention, 2024, was held in Chicago, a deep blue city in a deep blue state. The 2020 convention was meant to be in Milwaukee, in the swing state of Wisconsin, before officials opted for a mostly virtual convention due to the COVID-19 pandemic. This would be less about trying to win over the state for Democrats, but could still be bringing attention to political organization in the Mountain West, said Seth Maskett, a professor of political science at the University of Denver. Some of the other cities known to be submitting bids for the convention are New Orleans and San Antonio. Those could become new rivals for Denver as the process heats up. In past election cycles, city leaders were finalists who were finalists, pardon me, for the event, lobbed insults at one another, disparaging one another from across the country for a chance at the prestigious selection. Maskett said in the end, the party's choices are often surprisingly opaque. I would think the city of Denver would be very competitive with this, Maskett said. It's also pretty vague how the party makes this decision in the end and what features they actually end up being most persuaded by. The Democratic National Committee didn't respond to a request for comment by this story's deadline. Maskett remembers the 2008 convention being a very vibrant time to be in the city. That would be good news for Johnston, who has made vibrancy his biggest tagline for Denver's goals and who plans to run for a second term in 2027. Every sort of storefront and restaurant is kind of at its best and just showing people and trying to attract people. It's crowded, but it's an exciting time, Maskett said. The event would put Denver in the national spotlight, giving people from across the country a look at the city's mountainous skyline and revamped downtown. It's very good advertising, Maskett said. It's an expensive thing, but it's good promotion for the city. The timeline for when the National Committee will choose the location hasn't been announced, but the 2024 location was selected about a year and a half before the convention. In an unusually early announcement, the Republican National Committee in 2023 announced that it had selected Houston for its 2028 convention. Another factor that could come into play is that Denver has already hosted the event for Democrats twice before, first in 1908 and then in 2008. Several other cities have held the convention multiple times. It's been in Chicago 12 times, Baltimore 9 times, and New York 5 times. While some of those cities re-hosted more than two decades apart, the event was in New York City in 1976, 1980, and 1992. That means it wouldn't be unprecedented for Denver, for Democrats to choose Denver again 20 years later. It's not far-fetched at all, Maskett said. La Petite closure leaves unpaid rent frustration, by Sharon Dunn. Just a month after the La Petite French Bakery closure in downtown Greeley, the owner has moved on. But what's left in the wake is more than $30,000 in unpaid rent and frustrations among those who provided financial help to keep the business running. La Petite owner Fahd Chana blamed prolonged construction on 16th Street in front of his storefront last year as the chief reason his business plummeted 70%, forcing him to close his doors permanently on November 8th. But he's left the building owner scratching his head and the Downtown Development Authority frustrated, having given or arranged for Chana to have multiple lifelines to stay afloat during construction. He closed his bakery just a couple of weeks before construction ended. That's why it is so surprising. It's not like he quit when things were worse, said Raj Sharma of Vista Lodging LLC, which has been the bakery's landlord for 10 years. Now the street is open. to have this happen. At the end, when everything was just about to be okay, I suspect because of the amount of accumulated rent and other personal reasons, he just didn't want to continue. Sharma explained that when construction on 16th Street began, he and Chana worked out a deal whereby his rent would be the same percentage of sales he had prior to construction. At minimum, he'd paid about half the rent per month than his lease required. Until construction is over, let's make sure we don't collect any more rent than he has paying pre-construction, and we deferred the other amount, Sharma said. At the minimum, Chana was expected to pay $1,500 a month rent, Sharma said, when it would have normally been $2,400 a month. Rent was increased to $2,800 in July, he added. During construction, Chana also received $6,000 in construction assistance grants from the Downtown Development Authority. He also received a $10,000 DDA grant to expand his business in the building, which he decided on prior to construction. Bianca Fisher, executive director of the Downtown Development Authority, said she was frustrated that Chana and others blamed the downfall of the bakery on the street construction, knowing the extra financial assistance he'd been getting outside of the DDA loans. She said she would not seek recovery of any money the DDA sent him, but she wanted the truth to come out. Businesses come and go, and I don't fault people for trying their hand, and maybe ultimately it doesn't work out. That's the nature of business, especially small independent businesses, Fisher said. What was frustrating was the finger-pointing instead of acknowledging the incredible support they received and the inability to say, this model isn't working for me, maybe I should be a pastry chef at a little B&B. Chana has since moved on to contract work at the Courier Inn, 1221 9th Avenue in Greeley, where he has already created special dinners, holiday creations, and breakfast pastries. Chana did not return calls for comment on this move. In a previous interview, he said, I believe sometimes when there are situations like this, there is a time of almost saying goodbye to the location, the memories. I'm planning, hopefully, to take this whole situation and learn from it myself. Both Fisher and Sharma said they are puzzled that Chana was unable to make the bakery work, especially with the assistance he took. He gave no notice to Sharma, refusing to let him in the building to clear up some of the water damage he claimed was problematic, Sharma said, and he shut his doors abruptly, announcing it on Facebook just weeks after planning a grand opening of his expansion. The manner in which Chana left the business blaming a construction project, it devalues and undermines the work we do downtown, which is to support them and see them thrive, Fisher said. It's not our job to save every business. There's no sense of recourse. It's certainly a moment for pause. Sharma said he also helped facilitate a private $25,000 loan to Chana, which was to help fund the expansion of the bakery into an adjoining space. For that space, Chana applied for and received a $10,000 grant from the Downtown Development Authority, which Sharma said covered the monthly rent on the expanded business. Rent on the space was $2,000 a month. That grant was meted out each month, the first 4 months in $1,000 increments, the second in $850 increments, and the final month in $650 increments. He closed the business before receiving the entirety of the loan, which now totals $8,850. Sharma said it wasn't like the business plummeted overnight. It was a progression that had already started to right itself when Chana closed. Then fast forward to November, he was getting ready to open. His numbers were looking better, but back rent was due in the range of $30,000, Sharma said. Sharma said the numbers on the shop made sense. Chana was pulling in from $20,000 to $25,000 a month in sales prior to construction, and it slowly reduced to around $5,000 to $6,000, he said. He said he had no doubts the business would pick back up to pre-construction levels in no time. Even if he paid back rent of $10,000 at a time, he'd be done in 2 or 3 months. It's not like it was years and years of debt, Sharma said. That's why we did this. We weren't like not being financially proud. We knew the potential for this place and what he was able to do with it. From a financial standpoint, it made sense. He would have been able to take care of that in months. During his closure, Chana created 2 GoFundMe campaigns, one of which sought $25,000 and raised almost $3,900 to date. A second campaign raised $100. Both continue today. If Chana opted to come back to the building that hosted his business for the last 10 years, Sharma said he would not be opposed to working something out. Chana left equipment and furnishings at the bakery and gave up possession of the place. Meanwhile, Sharma, who said Chana will not communicate with him, has opted to send the back rent to collections. Chana is still on the hook for a 3-year lease on the property, but Sharma said he hopes to have a new tenant in the building soon. This article was first published by BizWest, an independent news organization, and is published under a license agreement. Obituaries. An obituary for Perry Earl Pepler, April 9, 1956 to December 24, 2025. Perry Earl Pepler, 69 of Eaton, passed away peacefully on December 24th in Eaton. He was born on April 9, 1956 in Greeley to Harvey and Ella Miller Pepler. After graduating from Platte Valley High School in 1974, Perry attended Western State College, where he was a member of the university's wrestling team. He later continued his education at Northeastern Junior College before completing his degree at the University of Northern Colorado, where he earned a bachelor's degree in industrial arts. During his college years, Perry met the love of his life, Marla Brinkman. On July 26, 1980, in Greeley, they joined their lives in marriage, beginning a love story rooted in faith, love, and grace that would carry them through a lifetime. Faith guided every part of Perry's life and was the foundation on which he built his family, work, and relationships. Raised farming alongside his father, he felt called to work the land and instill in his boys the same faith, worth, ethic, and values that had shaped his own life. When Perry wasn't on a tractor, truck, or a piece of farm equipment, he could often be found enjoying the outdoors. A true thrill seeker, he had a passion for boating, off-roading, snowmobiling, riding his Harley, and most recently, pickleball. No matter the season, Perry found joy in sharing his love of adventure, friendly competition, and faith with those around him. Perry is survived by his loving wife of 45 years, Marla Pepler, his sons Preston Pepler and wife Michelle, and Price Pepler and wife Brooke, and his grandchildren Beau, Carver, Max, Golden, and Ty. He is also survived by his parents-in-law, Marvin and Ann Brinkman, his brother-in-law, Mark Brinkman, and his niece, Sierra Brinkman. He also leaves behind a large extended family and many dear friends who will miss him greatly. He was preceded in death by his parents, Harvey and Ella Pepler, and 3 grandchildren lost through miscarriage. Memorial contributions in Perry's name may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital or Generations Church in care of Lighthouse Family Mortuary, 3600 West 22nd Street, Greeley, 80634. Condolences may be shared with the family at www.lfmlighthouse.com. Memorial service will be held Tuesday, January 6th at 10 a.m. at Generations Church in Greeley. Thank you for joining us for the Greeley Tribune, read by John Middleton.
The content featured in this recording may not reflect the views of AfterSight or the presenter. For questions, concerns, or editorial feedback regarding the Greeley Tribune, please contact them directly at letters@greeleytribune.com or call 970-352-0211.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.